basically my friends. We try, we put together, we see how best we can, you know what, let's try this place, let's try the next place. And when we don't get through, is I will listen. I will see, all right, let's see how best we can change stuff up and go again.
How many friends are you talking about?
Oh, there's a number of friends. This is mostly all throughout the Caribbean. About 10 or so.
How often do you actually communicate on this matter?
Almost every day.
Almost every day. Almost has any every one day. Of you, anybody's had success?
I'm sorry?
Anyone has had success out of that group?
Let's see here. Two of them had success. One is in St. Vincent. She works over there. The next one, she works here at one of the either the UNDP or the UN. And okay. Another one is in studying still over in.
Okay. So let me ask you this. Based upon this experience that you are sharing with us today.
Yeah.
If you had to recommend a change at the level of UE, because you've identified nepotism within the society as a challenge. You've identified the fact that you got a good degree from UE, but you still can't find a job in this society. Have you looked at it from the point of view of how UE may be able to modify what it is doing to help students like you?
Oh, absolutely. The university has this job fair coming up. It's going to be on a Wednesday. It's probably on either the 24th or somewhere around that. They have that job fair coming up. I have voiced my opinion towards them more than once about it, how geared it is, because it's only geared towards a certain degree, which is management and the like. So I've voiced my opinion towards them as well about that. So a job fair.
What have you recommended?
Try to see if they can get more businesses or a company or cadres to come down, any research or development project to come down and not only speak towards political science, but also towards law, also towards people who would have been doing any type of degree in chemistry and that type of stuff, because the sole focus is on majority buying and selling stuff. So you get companies from certain car companies coming over. You get other companies such as, I don't want to call names, but you get a more retail-like businesses coming towards the front and projecting. Those are the ones who are seen. Those are the ones who we know, the political science students now have to go to now. And those are the ones who will flatly reject us because our degree does not cater to what they want.
Okay. What I'll ask you to do is to leave your name and your number with the technical operator, producer. I don't know that we can give you any guarantees other than that. We will forward your information to someone and hope that they can give you some guidance on this matter. But I treasure the fact that you took the time to call and share your experience with us today, because it is basically symbolic of what many other young people are having to face in this country at the moment. And whether we like it or not, this is where we are. And it challenges the whole society to try to find ways and means of helping people like you.
Yeah. I mean, it's very difficult. It's very difficult. And I hope that all the businesses out there and the government, particularly the government and the other parties, because I'm not hearing them as much, all the other parties are listening towards the young people, because there's going to be a time when those students come out, they're going to be looking for places of employment. And everyone keeps saying that we are the future. We are the future. Yes, we definitely are the future. We do have ideas, we do have a voice, and we will be heard.
All right, sir. Thank you very much. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Welcome to the program. Here, hello. It's now 11:40 in Barbados. I stayed with this caller for a while because of all that he had to say. And, you know, sometimes in this program, you encounter a caller who is not the average and who clearly has a story to tell that we need to hear. That's an example of one of them. Hello? You're on the air.
Hello. Morning, Mr. Ellis. You hear me?
Yes, sir. Morning.
Yeah, how are you doing?
I'm okay.
All right. I must congratulate you. You've got that knack for picking out, like, how you've done this over the years, though. A caller that you should listen to, give an extension to, et cetera. And you're very good at that. Now, you quiz that gentleman there, that youngster, in a methodical way. And so much has come up from him. It's really touching to hear him, you know. I mean, he's made a clarion call. Clarion. I hope somebody would really pick it up and listen. And look, he's not egocentric. You know what he's done? All down the road, he's projected for the person not coming out. He's not only about himself. He's saying they're going to have other students down the road. So he's broad, comprehensive, very analytical, very, very, very clear. I really hope that something will come his way and that there'll be some improvement and he get the necessary assistance that he really would deserve. excuse me, please. On saying that, there are a number of things I want to touch on, but because of the time running upon you and things, let me say something that I want to go on today. You spoke about the hospital, and like mine stink alike. You know, recently, what was my thought? And you made this point this morning also. The hospital, the COVID, the influx of COVID, and what have you. But I passed by the hospital the idea, and it came home even more vividly. How they're dealing with all those other myriad of things that they were dealing with before the COVID, what's happening in those areas. So I said, well, David's really on the ball. I mean, you must give it to the hospital how they're coping. And I mean, they must be extended to the max, but they're still holding up, I would hope. But there are all those other conditions that they've got to deal with and grapple with day in and day out. Those conditions are still a fact of life.
I really wonder what is going to happen to Barbados eventually, though, because I really am amazed at the extent
to which... You frighten too? Well, not frighten as in frighten, but I do.
But too many people suffer in silence, and they don't feel that they are in a position to actually raise their concerns in any effective manner, because they feel that somebody somewhere is going to get at them because they're basically calling for their rights. And I hear things off the air about people suffering situations that are unacceptable, but they don't call brass tacks. They don't write a letter to the editor. They do nothing but sit down there and suffer in silence. You know, but
I agree.
That's the way it is. And if they don't suffer in silence, then they call Raul and ask Raul to speak on their behalf.
But I try to do my little bit. But it's really interesting that we've got to really look for our brothers and be our brother's keeper. Honestly, this is how much we try to fortify each other and put things together that it would spill off to helping of persons. I think you're well on this morning. And that guy, I think the persons listening, I suspect some help will come his way, you know. But it's good to put it out there. And what I like about him is that he wasn't, you know, reluctant. And some people don't like to bring their, like, personal health condition, that kind of thing. He came out without reservation, which is some people say it's good to talk, some it's good to speak, but sometimes when you speak to the wrong persons too. But in this case, I think he has spoken to the right person. I think help should come as well. I must commend him. I would always keep talking about this. Or quickly, The program yesterday with the CSM and the unification, look, I got to talk a year and a day. And you made a statement that sometimes long being around long, don't think? Being around long, in my case, is necessary because all the way down from the 60s. I remember when Sir Grantley Adams was the first federal prime minister, come a little boy. I came to shoot a front file. Edwin Carrington, Rex Nesville, all those persons with all the continuous effort to get the unification of the Caribbean, and all you do, all the energy expended, still today, is that not gel or knit together with all their pursuit. You had the Shirley-Murray situation. You know that, I don't know if you listened to the program yesterday, but Raul East McCauley identified himself as a former politician, etc., and he said he was roughed at on a diplomatic passport in Jamaica. I don't know really where you'll go or start. There's this xenophobia. There's this ego. What is taught in schools to start with? Is it taught in school to bring about the unification? If you don't have the groundwork planned and spread properly, you ain't gonna get nowhere. All of this going on, and the politicians too are marked responsible. We got the airline man.
Liat.
You got the Liat. You have the cricket. You have the trade barriers. Oh my. We are in shambles all over again after 40, 50, 60 years of effort. The Caribbean is not a unified block. I don't know when it will be. In my next 60-something years?
But I must tell you that I'm curious as to whether there was a lot of discussion about Liat in the context of regional integration. You could tell me whether it came up.
I don't know.
But I can tell you something.
I haven't heard.
On February, in the middle of February.
Yeah.
There was a guy in Antigua, a government minister in Antigua, launched a scathing attack on Barbados in Parliament.
Mm-hmm.
Name is Lennox Weston, Minister of State in the Ministry of Finance and Corporate Governance.
Yeah.
He said there was a plan to take over Liat or to destroy it at a meeting in Barbados to discuss the relocation of the headquarters to St. Vincent and the Grenadines, describing the previous Antigua and Barbados government of being too soft. He recalled that his administration has always said that the plan was to steal Liat, and if they failed, to destroy Liat. It's all well and good for him to talk about how he saw this attempt at destroying Liat. But further down in his remarks, he went even further. He said, let me go slowly, he told Parliament, because some of you are so naive. I love Mia. She robust and strong. She love Barbados. She ain't love y'all, he declared. He then said, you all think we must be nice and smile and talk nice to them, as if we be fully. Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister of Barbados then instructed the Minister of Civil Aviation within the shortest possible time by weekend. He goes on to say here, we are slaves. How long slavery finish? We are an independent country. We must not stand up and fight. He went beyond the issue of Liat, though, to actually make some comments, which, to me, they go to the core of trying to raise animosity among people. He said, this is the paragraph that I was offended by, one of them. Weston praised his government's ability, commitment, and fortitude in getting Liat back in the air against the odds while lashing out at Barbados' intellectual capacity and the performance of the economy. He said, most of all, having the intestinal fortitude, having the commitment, having the confidence in our own ability, that we went to better schools than them. We beat them in class all the time. We brighter than them. The economy looked better than them. Our economy performing better than them. So how come we watching them? Minister Weston declared. That's the kind of Caribbean that we have today. Politicians who will not necessarily speak like him in Parliament, but will act like him in the decisions that have to be made. That was one of the most divisive speeches I've heard in the Caribbean. I am not holding a brief for Barbados on the app. As I tell you already, I don't have enough information about what is going on with LEAC. That kind of discussion is held close to the chest. But does it deserve going to this level to actually pit people against people? That's how I saw it.
They rest my case. Now, I hope that minister understands that that does not augur well for unifying the Caribbean.
There's no need to be that offensive. And I think what happened here is that people in Barbados knew about it. And I think the government of Barbados was very careful not to respond to it and that sort of thing.
And
I think you understand why. Because, I mean, to respond to that is to help, to add fuel to fire. But it's ridiculous.
And two wrongs don't make a right.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, sir.
Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Well, I have had a fair amount of reaction to this young man who has been searching for a job that he believes matches his qualifications. This person writes, I was listening in my car. I heard you speaking to a young man who seems depressed because of not being able to get a job for which he studied. My son studied in the United States. He stayed on to explore the market there, as it would have been much more difficult if he'd come home and try to find one. And he only got a job 3 months ago. That is 2 years after his graduation, and certainly not in the field that he studied. He too was depressed, but not to the extent where he had to seek assistance. But I believe he may have reached that stage if he hadn't got something to do. He's quite happy now, as he's earning, but would be happier in the field of his studies. The writer goes on to say, I started my first job as a porter in the 70s because it was the only one I could find at the time. I left that company as a manager, and as a senior executive of the company I joined afterwards. I would ask the young man not to set his mind on his study area only as a start, but understand that he has a start in the job he's working now, and he just needs to keep trying until the time is right, or the time is right rather, because it will not happen before it's time. Here's another one. Parents need to teach their children a few critical skills before entering tertiary institutions. Do not just qualify for jobs, but qualify themselves to create jobs. The government has a role to play also, yet they cannot depend entirely on governments. People need to start building the entrepreneurial mindset, says the writer. This one concludes by saying university degrees only take you through the door, if you even get to the interview. It's how you apply yourself on the job that counts. Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Good afternoon, David.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon.
Mr. Brian, I called to respond to some of these statements that were made regarding my contribution yesterday. But before I do that, I crave your indulgence, because I need to respond to make a comment based on what the gentleman, based on your conversation you just had with the young gentleman. First, congratulations on your retirement. And when I remembered hearing about your story, one of the things that struck me is that you didn't go to university, did you?
No.
David. Right. You came out of school and you went and worked. And you worked with vigor and focus on what you wanted to. You didn't think that you needed to have, well, I don't know what was available at your time, but you didn't, over the course of your career, feel any necessity to go to university in order to get further qualifications, in order to advance yourself in the job that you were doing. When I studied architecture overseas, and when I came back here, I was working for government for a while, and then I got laid off. And then I started working in the hotel industry. And you know, the first job that I worked in the hotel industry was raking sand on the beach. Okay, as a beach attendant. So I didn't look down on any job. From there, you start as a base, and then you, what university should be teaching you is the ability to recognize opportunity, recognize what is happening around you, and then charting a path within which you establish what goal you want to get to, and then you establish a path of how to get there, step by step by step by step, using the resources that are around you and at your disposal. One of the problems we have in this country is that too often we are told that if you go and get a degree, then you will automatically get a job. And life does not work that way. And then we have this tendency also to blame people that and say that.
I don't think though that what this young gentleman says suggests that that is the way he saw it. His problem is that he is tried. He didn't anticipate that he would automatically get a job. But he complains that you try so hard and it is very, very difficult to the point where it's depressing.
I agree, and I understand, and I sympathize with him, okay? I sympathize with him. But what I'm also getting is not, he isn't alone in the sentiment that he's feeling.
But we understand
this,
that.
This, I think, is one of the things, one of the problems of all the graduates, of a large percentage of the people who graduate from universities in the West Indies, in Barbados.
But you have two subjects to Pardon discuss. Me? So if you spend all this time on this one,
right,
you
I know, right.
cut into now, your time on the other.
Okay. Now, I don't mince words. Okay? And yesterday when I spoke, you imagine you have a multiple choice question, a multiple choice on paper. There are three solutions on the paper. Only one is right. It doesn't matter what you feel that you think there should be another answer. There's only one answer. We have been told that the NIS, that we do not have a large enough population to support the NIS. Okay? There's either we increase contributions and decrease benefits, or we increase.
So let me help get to the meat of this matter, therefore. Are you suggesting that you just open up without a managed migration policy?
I did not know. I've never advocated without a managed
So what are you challenging then? I said specifically
that we have to establish a path towards migration in this country.
Right.
We have to
Which is the same as managed migration? Is that what you're saying? A clear path,
not just lip service to say that there is the opportunity to migrate to the country.
But sir, but in all due respect,
pardon me?
Saying a clear path can be misinterpreted.
You are invited to come to live in Barbados, to bring your family to live in Barbados, and over the course of 5 years or whatever, you will then be eligible for citizenship or whatever. And this
is managed migration, correct?
Right, if you want to say that. But I'm saying the point of the matter is we do not have that. We have paid lip service to it. So they were coming to me and telling me, for example, yesterday, we heard the CARICOM, when we spoke about the lack of police officers, the 300 that were needed or whatever, that was told ever since. Then the man representing CARICOM comes and says, oh, well, there is a mechanism within CARICOM that allows people to apply for, to work all throughout the Caribbean. Show me where Barbados has advertised, actively advertised, throughout the rest of the Caribbean to bring people to Barbados in order to fill those positions. And then in order to do that, as I said, as a part of the managed migration policy, to bring their families as well. Show me that. We have too much hypocrisy going on in this country. Too much xenophobia. And to sit down and listen to today, especially when people responding to what I say, and all I can hear them is, we can't do that. Crime travels with the fact you can't open your borders because crime is going to come over your border. So you have a choice. You refuse to manage the crime in your country, and then one of the excuses of not increasing the police force is because you're worried about bringing in the additional, bringing in a criminal.
All right, so
when I hear those sort of circular arguments, David, they don't make sense.
All right, sir. Thank you very much for calling. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks at 12:14 in the afternoon. Hello? You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. David Ellis.
Yeah.
How are you today?
I'm okay.
Okay, that's good to, hear. Mr. Ellis, I have an idea on the monkey situation. I heard a lot of people talk about the monkey situation, about how they're terrorizing, going into homes on the rooftops and all those things. And an idea came to me, I was at home on Saturday, and I saw a monkey on a school fence, right? And I did come in my head at the same time. I would say this. I would say that if Lord help me. If soldiers could set traps in the monkeys, right, and capture them and deport them to other country, other forest country, or other country out to the Barbados, and by doing that, they could bring foreign exchange for Barbados. That's my idea about the monkeys situation, David Ellis.
But seriously, somebody would have to be willing to pay for these monkeys. We can put them in the Amazon.
I beg pardon?
Send them to Guyana, send them into the Amazon in Brazil. Where are you going to put them? Somebody has to be willing to pay for them so you can get the foreign exchange. Have you thought that one through?